right off the start when we had some.
Welcome, everyone. I will convene the Joint Committee on Implementing Measure 91. This should be a pretty quick but very, very significant meeting. We're posted for a work session on House Bill 3400, and I will open that work session at this time. This bill has been through a lot of work, a lot of discussion. We have the bill in front of us. We have five amendments, and so I'd like to invite Mark Mayer up, our diligent and hardworking legislative counsel, to go through very quickly the five amendments, which are all on OLIS. And the amendments we'll be discussing are the 9s, the 10s, the 30, the 31, and 33, if you're following along at home. So, Mark, go ahead.
Chairs Leininger and Burdick, I'm here to briefly discuss the Dash 9, Dash 10.
Your name.
Oh, Mark Mayer, Legislative Council. Apologies. I'm here to briefly discuss the Dash 9, Dash 10, Dash 30, 31, and 33 amendments to House Bill 3400. The Dash 10 and Dash 9 amendments have been on OLIS for a period of time, and they've gone through public hearing. The Dash 9 amendments are primarily the pieces that the committee has added to the recreational bill, as well as the testing, labeling, packaging, research certificate, dosage, crime reduction, and certain other pieces of legislation related to marijuana. The Dash 10s are now the rewrite of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, minus that are based on Senate Bill 964, minus the strong preemption and local opt-out language. The Dash 30s amend the Dash 9 amendments to do a few things. I will only discuss the ones that I think are of the most relevance and that they have the most significance for the committee and other interested parties. I think the major thing is that the Dash 30s do sunset all residency requirements for the rec program after 4 years. So after 4 years, there will be no more residency requirement for the rec program. Real briefly, the Dash 31s have the same sunset for the residency requirements of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, so they work in conjunction with one another. The Dash 30s also contain language related to land use and local regulation of these particular sites in order to clarify that the land use provisions and the local regulation of these sites applies to all the facilities, all the different types of license holders. The Dash 30s also rewrite the opt-in for the medical marijuana grow sites that want to participate in the rec system. They rewrite that so that on page 2 of the amendment, all that is allowed to be sent into the rec system underneath these Dash 30s is the excess that they grow off of what is allowed underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. So no medical marijuana sites that have both medical and rec, the excess can be sold into the rec system, but otherwise no additional plants that are otherwise not allowed underneath OMA. And then finally, I think the last piece is there's clarification language around the Environmental Best Practices Task Force and adding in additional members, for instance, individual who represents State Department of Energy and Energy Trust has been added, as well as a Senate Minority Leader appointment and a House Minority Leader appointment for the members of the Legislative Assembly. So that's the Dash 30s. The Dash 33s, which also amend the Dash 10s, further reduce crime for those persons who possess four times the amount in their household that they're allowed underneath the home grow provisions, from a C felony to an A misdemeanor. And then the Dash 31s, which amend the Dash 10s, they contain the same sunset on residency requirements. They also further align the period of time that a applicant for registration has to wait after being convicted for a marijuana crime They reduced that amount of time to 2 years to keep it in alignment with Measure 91. And then finally, they do contain two local option sections. It should be noted that these are not in lieu of the local option that was provided in Measure 91. We left that untouched. They're in addition to it. The first one allows cities located in counties in which 55% of the votes cast in the county during the last election on ballot measure 91 were in opposition to the ballot measure. It allows those counties and those cities to have a clean opt-out and to basically opt out of allowing the establishment of any of the six sites that are mentioned here, which are dispensaries, medical processing sites, and all four of the license holders. A city or county underneath this provision has 180 days to adopt the ordinance after the effective date of the act. And if a city or county adopts an ordinance under this section, it will not be allowed to collect the tax or to impose the tax that is allowed cities and counties in the Dash 9 amendments. The Dash 31 amendments contain a continuing opt-out provision as well, whereby a city or county can refer to the electors of the city or county whether the question as to whether or not the establishment of one of these sites should be allowed in the city or county, and the electors can vote on that. And that is a continuing provision. And again, that also contains the language that if they go ahead and they prohibit one of these six sites from being located in the city or county, then they cannot impose the tax that is otherwise allowed under the Dash 9s. I think the idea there is we don't want a city saying only retail sites, no production sites, no dispensaries, et cetera. So it's, if you want to impose the tax, you have to allow the sites to be established. One last point of clarification. It was asked that I clarify that medical marijuana grow sites, designated caregivers who provide directly to patients, patients themselves, and home grow provisions of Measure 91 are untouched by these opt-out provisions. They will be able to continue to conduct business and act underneath the law in all jurisdictions in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you for that summary. Why don't we start the process now of moving these amendments. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 9 amendments dated June 8th, 2015 to House Bill 3400.
Senator Farioli has moved.
We need to suspend rules first.
No, we do that at the end. Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 9 amendments dated June 8th, 2015. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Prasansky.
The question just came to me as walking in the door, so I'll mark up here. I'm wondering if you could, if he has the Dash 9s, look at Section 40, which is on page 46, and this is lines 3 through 11. Madam Co-Chair, this is where we basically have the drafted at this point that OLCC and its employees cannot be sued for any conduct or actions they take. The question that has been presented to me just for clarity, if you had somebody for whatever reason that had a license that was up for renewal, but something changed in the sense of federal law or whatever, and OLCC took the position that they were not able to grant a license to them or a renewal, what options would that disappointed licensee have at that time? Would they be able to either go to a circuit court for a writ of mandamus to commanding the commission to show why to the court that the license should not be issued, or if they went through the contested hearing process, which I think we've heard on the record is what normally would occur, is that you would have a agency contested the hearing, and if it went against the licensee, would they at that point have some recourse into the courts? And so I just want to get this on the record so we can have that buttoned down.
Okay. Senator Prasansky, you're correct. Writ of mandamus is one option, but probably the preferred course of procedure would be to file a contested case hearing whereby you challenge the decision to either suspend or revoke or otherwise impose discipline on the person. That would go to contested case. And then if the agency was found to be in the right in that proceeding, then the person could file, and they could continue that action and bring it to Marion County Court for further processes. After Marion County Court, it would go to the Court of Appeals and so forth and so on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for getting that on the record. Further discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Perioli.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 10 amendments dated June 8th, 2015 to House Bill 3400.
Senator Perioli has moved to adopt the Dash 10 amendments dated June 8th, 2015. Is there discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Perioli.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 30 amendments dated June 8th, 2015 to House Bill 3400.
Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 30 amendments dated June 11, 2015 to House Bill 3400. Is there discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 31 amendments dated June 8, 2015 to House Bill 3400.
Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 31 amendments dated June 15, 2015 to House Bill 3400. Is there discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 33 amendments dated June 15, 2015 to House Bill 3400.
Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 33 amendments dated June 15, 2015 to House Bill 3400. Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli. Senator Prezesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Co-Chair. I just want to put on the record, I will be supporting the Dash 33s. I also think this is a beginning point as for continued discussions. I've put together a proposal which I've shared with the co-chairs and some other individuals on the committee that I feel that we, if we're going to follow the will of the voters and ensuring that individuals that are caught up in the system on the criminal side be considered at the same level and sanctions that are available and currently being used in the alcohol, beer, and wine area. And so there is one particular area in Section 122 of the Dash 9s that we've now adopted that I believe will want to have continued work in the future.
And I anticipate this work will continue, but for the meantime, I wanted to acknowledge Anthony Johnson for finding an obvious discrepancy and allowing us to at least make that improvement in this bill. So thank you, Anthony. Representative Leininger.
Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge some great leadership by Representative Olson and also Senator Prezesky and Rob Bovet and Anthony Johnson in identifying places where we can deal with sentence classifications and opportunities for expungement. I think it's a really important part of the bill, and your leadership has made it possible. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks to all concerned. It was it's one of the uplifting parts of this bill. Okay, is there further discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Farioli.
Chair Burdick, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 3400 as amended without having a fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Senator Farioli has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 3400 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time. Committee, just as way of explanation, we have the fiscals on the big amendments, the 9s and 10s, which is where the fiscal actually exists. Some of the late entry amendments that we just adopted have not yet had their paperwork done, and that's why this motion is necessary. So is there a discussion? Are there objections? So ordered.
Rules are suspended.
The rules are suspended. So now, Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 3400 as amended be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
To the, yes.
House Bill.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
I'll restate the motion.
Yours is right there.
Thanks.
They don't get those big numbers.
Chair Burdick, I move House Bill 3400 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there some trumpets that we can hear while we... Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3400 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I appreciate a lot of the work that's gone into this bill. I also feel the need to express some rather intense frustration with the process the committee has followed. We have a bill in force today. It's very complex. I feel it's two steps forward and one step back, and I appreciate the fact that it's at least two steps forward. I think that the process we follow has been unfortunate. It's been dysfunctional in many respects. The decision by the Senate to break up the committee, so to not allow for a continued discussion between the House and the session in a productive manner, cost a great deal of time to the committee and has put us in a situation where we do not have time to hear public testimony on the bill we're about to pass. I think the public has been shut out of this process to a great extent, and I do understand the needs of local elected officials are being addressed, but I'm not quite sure the needs of medical marijuana patients are being addressed at the extent that I wish that they would be. So again, I just want to express my frustration with the process. I have a strong passion for the legislative process that includes respect between both chambers, discussion between both chambers, discussion between members, but most of all, discussion with the public. And this is in contrast to the way that I've tried to operate in the joint committees I have been part of, where we actually have taken the committee out into communities around the state to actually hear from them, not to to actually do complex actions that impact people's lives, listening only to a small group of people. So I'm frustrated with the process, Madam Co-Chair. I will offer a courtesy yes today to the bill, because there are so many good things in it, and I greatly respect my House co-chair, for her relentless efforts to get to a positive place in as many parts of this bill as she possibly can. I have not had a chance to hear from the public on this bill. It's large. It's complex. I brought forward concerns I have about the fiscal impact that the Oregon Health Authority has initially proposed on 3400. Issues have not been addressed by this committee. There hasn't been any interest in it. We do have the ability in the Ways and Means process now to develop a budget, a separate OLCC marijuana budget, which we'll do to the best of our ability to try to address the concerns. It would have been much more helpful if this committee had been open to actually having those concerns dealt with during this committee process, but the choice was to not do so. So again, I express my frustration. I give a courtesy yes in honor of my co-chair, and thank you for your time to let me vent.
Recognize Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to take a moment to say thank you to you and Co-Chair Leininger for the work that you've done for us and moving this forward. This has been a very difficult process. Shifting from 1974, that I would never forget that. I mean, having nothing. I mean, you could just think about this. Back in 1974, any amount of marijuana was a C felony in the state. Then the next year was less than an ounce. And then a couple of years ago, we moved to 4 ounces to get to where we're at today. I mean, because the voters wanted this. It's been a major shift and a major change. And I just really appreciate the work on this bill. Where it's at right now, because I do feel that it has some good sidebars to it, but there's been a lot of good input too from a lot of folks. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pazanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I also want to express my desires to see us move forward on this bill, but also looking at the additional work that we haven't done, as I mentioned previously, on Section 122 on the Dash 9s. As Representative Olson says, we've taken some pretty big steps to kind of, let's say, follow what the will of the voters is based on their support and passage of 91. Unfortunately, we have not completed that task all the way, and I can understand how the mindsets of just moving so quickly, and you think over a 30-year period of the transition that's gone on, but at this point it's time to alleviate those individuals from the past convictions they've had, for they can move forward in their lives and not have those burdens, and also ensuring that as we move through this transition that we're not having unintended consequences for new individuals, because there are still some significant crimes that are still listed here. I think the other part, which I've heard from the co-chairs, that we will continue to work, but I think it's worth and parting in here. In this bill, it does not provide for early distribution on the recreational sales. And I know Senator Farioli and I both have been wanting to see that go forward. I'm assuming we both still will be doing everything we can in the next week or so to ensure that we have a transition. And if it means that the state is not going to be able to collect revenue on day one, so be it. The bottom line is that if we're going to honor not only what the voters passed, but also, I think, as important, what the Cole memo tells us as a state that we need to do, we need to ensure we're not enlightening and fortifying the black market, the underground market, to the point of where it's going to be detrimental to the state and moving forward with what the voters have passed this last November. So with those, Madam Co-Chair, I will be supporting this motion, but also hope that everyone here is still willing to work diligently so we can complete the rest of the work that we need to do before the end of this session and not set up a cabal that's going to have Oregon in a unique situation that would be very detrimental, I think, for the state going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I too, would like to express thanks to everyone that worked on this and continuing to push a little bit harder when it looked like things were going to fall apart. I think that's really important. In this last round where we've decided to allow some of our local governments to opt out of having recreational marijuana in their communities, we've entrusted local elected officials with quite a bit of responsibility in doing that. And I just want to point out that the voters did not want to do that. The voters wanted to go the opposite direction, and we're changing that. Earlier in the session, I was glad to be a defender of Measure 91 on that issue. Now we've gotten to a place where I think even the proponents are comfortable with some level of local control. And in the statutory provisions that we just agreed on, there are places where we expect the local elected officials in implementing their local land use codes and zoning codes to be reasonable. The word is used over and over. And I expect that of them. And if we find that local governments are not acting reasonably as we go forward and are prejudicing otherwise now legal businesses in their communities, I want to hear about it, and I will be watching. And if that is the case, I think we owe it to the voters that pushed so hard to have this change in our state to go back and take a second look if those local elected officials are abusing the authority that we're granting them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lanier.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Co-Chair Burdick. It's been an honor and a pleasure to work with you and learn from you and the rest of this team. You know, a lot of the people on this joint committee have served for a long time and with tremendous distinction, and it's been a real honor for me as a new person to be able to work with you and with people in this community, many of whom have worked on legalization issues for a very long time or served in their capacities for a long time. So I think, has it been easy at every moment? Heck no. Just ask my husband. He could tell you an earful. But I think that we've moved through some really challenging obstacles and toward a place where there's pretty broad acceptance. And to that, for that, I'd like to credit a lot of people in this room. I think Jonathan Manton has shown wonderful even keel and willingness to keep talking. Jeff Sugarman, similarly, Amy Margolis, one of his colleagues, have shown great steadfast commitment to moving forward, even when it's hard. Kimberly McCullough, who's new with the ACLU, has been a creative, optimistic voice. Anthony Johnson has shown a willingness to think creatively when times were hard. Beth Cook and Jeff Anderson have been soft-spoken, really thoughtful, creative partners. Justin Martin has done a great job and always been a good colleague when things were choppy. But I also want to call out Rob Bovet and Scott Winkles, who helped us find our way forward, even though we didn't always have the same perspective. I did not always have the same perspective as some of the local government people, even though I've been in local government. And that was important. And Lisa Nato, who helped us do the licensing and packaging and lab testing standards. you may not like everything in this bill, but and you may not, and Nikki Terzieff, who has been a tremendous advocate for processors and dispensary owners and others in this room who I'm forgetting, Alan Tresider, similarly, I mean, I'm forgetting people, but the point is that we have done some good work together. I am particularly proud of the criminal justice improvements that we have and our commitment to having a work group to further work on crime reclassification. I'm proud of the direction to OLCC to come up with an education campaign so that young people understand that legal marijuana doesn't mean it's legal for them. The worker protections that are going to help workers have the right to organize, whistleblower protections, help make sure people have fair working conditions, access to capital without too much hindrance by having background checks instead of only requiring in-state capital. I think that's smart. The lab standards and testing, after that Oregonian piece about pesticide in product, I think it seems particularly prescient that we have some great rigorous lab standards and accreditation and testing that will help people know that their product is free of contamination. Senator Farioli's leadership on some banking issues, Ken's on land use, Senator Representative Buckley's on the Environmental Task Force, Senator Burdick on tax issues, Representative Wilson on the good neighbor needs to give local governments tools in order to be able to reasonably regulate time, place, and manner and help make sure that wherever you were on Measure 91, you can find that your neighbors are being good neighbors. Senator Cruz, similarly. I mean, it's been a great team effort. I was saying to someone the other day that I guess the way that you know that we struck a compromise is that everyone is mildly dissatisfied with where we are. But I think, OLCC has done a great job of bringing people together, Steve Marks and Rob Patridge. I think we've been a phoenix rising from the ashes several times in this process. And my greatest thanks goes to Mark Mayer, who's been kept a sense of humor, stayed awake, done at least 33 versions of amendments to 3400 in the last 10 minutes. We've done a good effort, and we'll hopefully have a chance to do even more good work. And I appreciate everyone who's helped with the process. Things that we got right because of you, and things we got wrong is strictly our fault. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. You can ask a question, how can you be called on to legislate a culture change? And that's what we got here on this committee, most of us knowing very little about what we were doing as we began. We had to learn as we went. But one thing is common, and that is everyone I speak to in this legislative body, speaking of the House and those I've talked to in the Senate, all say the same thing. And they say, I wouldn't be on that committee you're on for anything. Yeah. I've heard that over and over again. And so I want to thank the committee because many of us worked beyond our comfort levels. The compromise necessary was palpable. We couldn't have gotten where we've gotten without good spirits on this committee working to do as we saw the right. So I just want to thank all of you for the expertise that you brought. I apologize to the folks in the audience who undoubtedly left here shaking their heads at times at our lack of knowledge about this product. But I do think that ultimately what we've done here is good work. It will always be frustrating. The legislative process always will be. But yet that's built in. We all come with different values, different lifestyles. So thanks. I just appreciate flying along with you guys. It's been a great experience, something that not many people wanted to do. And I'm sure that some of you didn't want to do it either, but you did. And so we've come up with something that is a beginning. The heavy lifting continues. As this moves along in the process, there's a lot of heavy lifting yet to go. There are a lot of people who need to be convinced, and we've got to do some work. We've got our work cut out for us there. But as far as the product that we bring forward, I think it's explicable. We can share that with folks and say that we did our best. We'll be working on this forever. We'll absolutely be working on this forever. I'm convinced of that. But it's a product that I'm proud of. not perfect, but I am proud of it, and thank you for all that you did to make it so.
With your comments? Well, I wish to associate myself, especially with my co-chair's remarks about gratitude for all the hard work that's gone into this. We have all stretched beyond our comfort level. I think I can say that without exception, from regardless of where we're coming from. It has been an inspirational process for me. It's been harder work than anything I've done in my 18 years in the Senate. But my goal as we went into this was to have a model that other states could look to. We've got other initiatives in other states coming up. We've got an increasing push by the federal government to decriminalize marijuana at the federal level. And the more time I spent struggling through some of these issues, the more I became passionate about federal delisting of this plant. And I think when that day comes, and I think it will come, my goal, and I think we've moved well toward that goal in House Bill 3400, is to be positioned so that Oregon can do what Oregon does very well, and that is produce high-quality marijuana. Right now, we are limited. We can only share marijuana within our state. But as we become, as other states go toward legalization, I think that's where they're going, and regulation and taxation, I think we are in a new post-prohibition era, and I think it will position Oregon very well to be a prime producer of a high-value crop that is effectively regulated, is high quality, is recognized for its many attributes. So with that, would you please call the roll?
Senator Meyer.
Yes.
Representative Buckley.
Yes.
Representative Helm.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
In spite of the sage-grass issue, I will say yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Ferriola.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Pozanski.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Leininger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Burdick.
Aye. The motion has passed. Co-chair, who will be your House carriers?
Well, I think I would love it if Representative Olson and I could be co-carriers.
And Senator Ferrioli and I will co-carry on the Senate.
Nice.
So good work, committee. Good work, audience. Now we'll move on to our next challenge, which is to open a public hearing on House Bill 2041.
This isn't right.
Adam.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2041 is specifically dealing with the tax issue, the Dash 2 amendments, and recently posted Dash 3 amendments. We have a few folks scheduled to testify.
Okay. Can we start out with, did Masson show up for this? I don't see, did you see Masson?
I saw him here.
All right. Well, I think... yeah, why don't we just start with our witnesses so we don't keep people waiting. Bob Blake and Sean Savage. Oh, before you get started, we didn't have an evacuation here. We've got high-level negotiations going on in the building on other subjects, and that's why we lost a couple of our committee members. It was nothing personal. So welcome.
Thank you. My name's Bob Blake. I represent a number of organizations, but I've met most of you under Oregonians for Better Health, which is a not-for-profit that I set up to basically sponsor medicinal cannabis research. Taxation issues, although it has very little to do with the medicinal side, and I have no written comments, but I will supply them. It's a very sensitive topic, and if we tax too much, as we've all discussed, what will happen is we're going to get to a situation where we price affordability out of it. And it's my prediction that anything over a 10% tax will result in people going to get more medical cards. It's just a mathematical model. It just depends on how much cannabis you use in a typical week. Owning a dispensary, I'm seeing the average patient at about $70 per visit, and I think I'm pretty consistent with lots of the others. So if you do that every week, that's $3,500 a year. At a 20% tax, that's $700. It would make more sense to get a medical card at that point. And so you have to be very sensitive if you're trying to, whatever your incentives are, I just want you all to think very carefully through that. That's all I'm asking. Try to get as much math behind it as you possibly can and ask whether it be Casey Houlihan to gather information from ORCA for you, because we can give you all the numbers. If you ask Jeff Sugarman and his group, who have a lot of dispensary owners, ask them. And there are others. I just think that it's a fairly easy math problem. It depends what incentives you want to create. And the other thing on the whole tax side, which disturbs me and a lot of the medical people, is that we find many millions of dollars are paid in fees, and they really don't go into the program. They go and get siphoned off somewhere else, and that's a real concern for a lot of the medical. And so if you want to regulate medical in a tighter way, there certainly is enough money in the system, if you will. But I really carefully think about the taxation. Anything above 10% honestly will begin to create incentives in different directions. And that's all I'll say as a finance person for many years. It's just a difficult, but yet just collect the data. There, it's there.
Thank you.
Thank
Are there
you.
Questions from the committee? I represent Ronnie.
Mr. Blake, I wanted to thank you and Marshall Koboff for your insights into taxation and also the effect of it on consumer buying patterns. We are going to have a gentleman from the Department of Revenue come up next to offer, I think, the insights that he's got so far on how we make equal to the Measure 91 point of taxation at harvest the taxation that we would apply at point of sale. Do you feel like the point of sale part of it aligns with your thinking? You're just wanting us to be attentive to not increasing the magnitude of taxation over the Measure 91 approved amount?
I made the assumption, Co-Chair Leininger and the remainder of the committee, I made the assumption that we were going to move toward a point of sale.
Right.
I made that assumption. To tax the grower is perhaps the worst incentive you can put in the system. The grower is perhaps the most disadvantaged at point of negotiation. Unless the grower or the cultivator owns a dispensary in a vertically integrated model, the tension in the system between a cultivator and a dispensary owner is palpable. And you might as well put all the pressure on the consumer at the purchase point and not on the cultivator, in my opinion. So the direction of doing point of sale, although as Oregonians we don't like sales taxes, this is just the fairest way. You do it's point of sale tax, value added tax.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. Is Sean Savage here?
Yes. Hi, my name is Sean Savage, and I am a systems architect. I have created a computer model of the flow of Oregon, of marijuana in Oregon. I call it the Oregon Marijuana Matrix. I've created a open source free website that does have simulations on there. And in fact, I've been using Insight Maker, which is a system dynamics model, to even simulate the difference between recreation and marijuana, recreation and medical taxing for that already. I don't have any data. One of the issues that you're going, that this committee is going to come into with taxes is how do you, what is the best way and the most efficient way to create a taxing system? A way to do that is to analyze the model of the flow and then pick strategic points within the flow that you know are choke points. And at that location is a location that you can use for both auditing and taxes. I've created a system by which it's semi-anonymous auditing is done for the OMMP, and full compliance auditing is done for the OLCC recreational. And I've created something called a Oregon Cannabis Credit, which is a unit of marijuana that can be used to measure flow and for taxing purposes. And it is all up on the website, GitHub, Green PDX, Canna Audit. And I believe you have papers in front of you about that. I want to thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Mazen is here now. Mazen Malik, just a couple of questions about the bill and the revenue and when you might expect to see how much money we can get from this. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Leninger. For the record, Mazen Malik with Legislative Revenue Office. I've been accused of being with the Department of Revenue, but I'm not. I'm with the Legislative Revenue Office. I work for you. The bill as it stands, the way we are looking at it, it has done a very important thing, which is moving the taxation all the way to the point down. Now, why is that important in the analysis that we are doing with it? When you tax at a higher level, what happens once you move from one stage to another in the system is you have a process of markup. And markups between different stages comes about 35, 45, sometimes 100%, which means a tax at a $35 in the beginning could tumble down to almost triple that much at a different time. So when you went to a point of taxation at the end, what you've done is actually reduce the price for the product at the end for the consumer to be able to have more price level that is lower than otherwise it would have been. Now, by doing that, you're able to increase probably the percentage of where the market that we see, the legal market, will be able to buy it out of the existing market. Now, remember, there is a market that exists today, and it is illegal market in, for all the sense. The minute you introduce a legal product, you're trying to almost corner into the market with a new product. Now, keep in mind, we probably will never be able to compete on price with the legal market. That is not possible. And it's not possible because the way that we have regulations built into the system, as in the bill that you've just passed, that is not anything that the illegal market will comply with. So they don't have testing, they don't have regulations, they don't have a way of seed to sale, they don't have any of the regulations that you are trying to give the control of the, you know, the peace of mind. This is just like vehicles. You could buy a vehicle someplace at different levels, and then if you have regulations, it becomes a different product altogether. So on a price, you probably will never be able to. We will never be able to compete with the black market. It is just by the nature of the beast not possible. So at this point, one of the things that also the legal market does not have to worry about is the main tax, federal tax 298E. And that happens that you always will carry that as also part of the price. So it's still in our analysis that at Measure 91, we thought that immediately we will be able to capture about 31-32% of the market. About one-third of the market that exists today goes legal at the time when legalization happens. Now, we're remember, this has also a point of price with it. And what we're trying to do is to examine to the point is the price at the end to the consumer will be able to reduce it more to push market share, if you will, that allows you to get amount of revenue that we were thinking about. The amount of revenue that we thought Measure 91 would give you is, in general, will be about 20 to 20. Excuse me, to $21 million a year, providing.
Help is on the way.
I'll say another word. Yeah, wait till we get you fixed.
Well, I'm glad I didn't say 100 million.
Dude.
Everybody would be coughing, right?
So our estimate at Measure 91 revenues is about $21 million in a fully phased-in, fully implemented legalized system. Under Measure 91. Now, that will come into process until it reaches that point. It's not going to happen the day we open the doors, if you will. And then you have setup costs and so on. And then we distribute these into the different uses that the Measure 91 puts together. So what we're trying to get to a point is tell you exactly with the 17% how far we go. Unfortunately, I'm not able to tell you this at this minute, but I'm close because we're running all the models to come and see how all these pricing points tumble through the system to the point where it impacts the price at the consumer level. Remember, if both sides, legal and illegal, are taking the same price at the beginning, and you're adding all these different costs to the process, you're escalating the price at a much faster rate than you would for the illegal system. So we're running all these price points, the elasticity of the demand that we are looking at, and then at the end we will have to make a few assumptions, and the assumptions would be that the price at a certain point for the illegal market would gonna start going up because enforcement will start kicking in and pushing that price to be more costly, and therefore it becomes not only more costly as production costs, but more costly as distribution and market share costs. And there'll be pressures coming down. So in 10, 15 years, perhaps you will get to the point where we are completely in capturing the market like we have with alcohol today. But that is probably about 10 to 15 years ahead. And these are the models that we built. We're re-examining everything because we've changed that system. We're almost there to tell you. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you that answer today. I would have loved to, but there's a lot of numbers to crunch.
I appreciate that. And, of course, we are in a tight timeline, Mazen, for getting the revenue impact. And I think most people in the audience know that our goal here is to stay within the ballpark that 91 established. And once you make the translation from a grower tax to a point-of-sale tax. And the other objective we're trying to accomplish here is to keep the tax low enough, certainly lower than the other two states, Colorado and Washington, which the 17% placeholder, which is our best guess at this point, that fulfills both of those, that fulfills that requirement. It is lower than Washington and lower than Colorado. And so what we're trying to do is to try to find a taxing point that will raise the kind of revenue that the public expected when they voted on 91, but will not be so excessive as to actually encourage the black market or the inappropriate use of medical cards. So are there questions from the committee? Since we have no senators, are there questions from the House? Okay, see no questions. Thank you, Mazin. With that, committee, our work is completed. We will, at this point, keep your eyes peeled for a revenue impact statement on OLIS. We are scheduled for a meeting on Thursday morning at our new time of 8 o'clock, which I will currently revise to 8:30. I expect gratitude all around for that. And so just watch we're on 1 hour notice, so just watch for the agenda for Thursday or notification that the meeting will not take place. So good work, committee. Good work, audience. We are adjourned. We are adjourned. So good work, committee. Good work, audience.